ladies and gentlemen, tonight, the reigning, defending, undisputed, universal heavyweight champion,
Wildcat Radio 2.0. Bear down, you beautiful people.
What's up, everybody? This is Wildcat Radio 2.0. I'm Adam Green. He's Brett Barry. And I guess since the last time we potted, Brett, Arizona men's basketball lost a few more players. We knew when we talked, it was like, okay, what's the offseason going to hold? There's possibility that the entire starting lineup would not come back, and there's possibility that some of them would, and obviously transfer portal is going to do what the transfer portal does. At that point, they had lost Philly B and Paulus Moroskis. And we're like, okay, a couple of intriguing players from the bench, but not exactly, you know, doesn't move the needle. So we're like, oh, no, wait, what's up?
I was going to say, this is Grant Whiteman erasure.
Oh, yeah, I mean, sure. But it was like, okay, Arizona hadn't lost any key contributors, right? Maybe future guys that could help out, but no one that was like an impact player from last year's team. Since then, Umar Ballo, who had another year if he wanted it, decided to enter the transfer portal. Dylan Anderson, who redshirted and was supposedly part of the future, entered the transfer portal. Kylan Boswell, who there was talk that maybe he would elect to transfer, especially if Jaden Bradley took over as a starting point guard. He entered the transfer portal. So that's three more players, two of whom were starters last season. One of whom I didn't really expect to follow back. They did a senior day for him and everything. So it's like they kind of were anticipating that could be it for Marbalo. So, yeah, it's a little different now, right?
Yeah, and I think obviously the biggest one in terms of concern of losing him as an Arizona fan has got to be Umar Ballo, right?
I mean, biggest in like literal and metaphorical and yeah.
And in most ways. And it's, you know, I think it's curious to the casual fan why he's in the portal and not declaring for the draft. But also I think in the age of NIL, you know, and Ballo's not necessarily the traditional. If Zach Edey is questionable to be a fit in the modern NBA, what chances Umar Ballo have when he's like 7 inches shorter and the same weight, right?
Sure.
And it's an athletic big man game in the NBA now, so it feels a little bit like Umar Ballo is like, hey, I love y'all, I'm gonna go get paid at whatever university NIL writes the biggest check, and Arizona has other roster spots to fill, and it's almost like a salary cap play. But love Umar Ballo, but it seems like everyone's leaving on good terms.
Well, that's the tough part about it, right? Like Umar Ballo developed himself into a really good player when he came over with Tommy Lloyd. When Lloyd first got hired at Arizona, it's like, who's this project, right? Is this gonna be any good, or is he just a large human? And he played a little bit that first year. He's like, oh, this guy can actually play a little bit. And then he was a starter the last two and had a really good season last year. Like he, other than his missed free throws, and like he never got better at free throws, and that cost them. But Umar Ballo gave everything he had to this program. So got no ill will towards him. And, yeah, it seems like obviously he had the role in Tucson. He had the chance to win in Tucson. He had the notoriety in Tucson. The only thing that maybe he didn't have was the huge NIL, which presumptuously, like that's – presumably that's what he's leaving for, you know, whoever can have the biggest bag, which I understand that, because if you don't have big time NBA prospects, like he could probably play ball somewhere overseas, but if you don't have big time NBA prospects, then yeah, make as much money as you can in the college game when your last year of eligibility, I guess. And like, we can get to Boswell and Dylan Anderson in a minute, but I guess my concern there is that you're Arizona basketball, right? You're one of the premier programs. You bring in talent through recruiting, through the transfer portal, and you can't keep one of your guys because of NIL. Like, that's a new one. It's one thing when Arizona football loses someone because it's not a premier program, right? It's not a national brand. Arizona basketball losing players simply for NIL, and I get it. Ballo gave 3 years to the program. He doesn't owe them anything. I'm not blaming Umar at all. But does that concern you at all that Arizona is losing a player presumably because of money and money only? Like, Arizona basketball is losing a player due to money and money only.
So on the surface, a little. But when you look at it in full context, I think it gets a little bit more nuanced. You know, NIL, the NIL well is not limitless for Arizona, even if it is very competitive, right? It's kind of, it's almost like baseball. There's not a salary cap, but there's, you know, there's big market yeah. teams, small market teams, and you got to be smart. And there's a question there of, you know, roster management used to just be about managing minutes and playing time. And now there's another criteria there, which is balancing your NIL money that at least is, you know, every, the core of what NIL was that a player could actually market themselves. And I don't think there's anything that stops that. I think the way the collectives work is it's a little bit more of like, you know, wink, wink, nudge, nudge. This is your name, image, likeness. And they just kind of have a salary cap.
Go do one commercial and make all this money or something. Yeah.
And it's kind of pre-arranged-ish. Just this side of writing somebody a check, right? As opposed to like the guy that started this was like the punter that had like a million social media followers and the NCAA said he was ineligible because he was so popular and it monetized his Instagram for like 10 grand a year, which is nonsense. And when you approach it from that way, and I think to kind of combine it with something you were saying in terms of where he was a project that developed into a really good player, there's the other question to consider here is, and this goes back to almost a traditional roster management question, do you risk losing Mo Crivas by blocking him with Umar Ballo in terms of minutes, and if Ballo is ready to move on? But also in the age of NIL, are you going to throw a big bag at Ballo? I didn't mean to alliterate, but that kind of worked. Do you blow your budget, to add a few more B's there, Adam, in my alliteration, to keep him when you have a Mo Crivas there who the coaching staff seems super high on, I'm personally very super high on, and it's a little bit of a gamble, but you also have a big gaping hole at the power forward spot. You have uncertainty with some of the guys that are you know, maybe coming back of the ex starters. Maybe they do, maybe they don't. Maybe a Caleb, maybe you take that money and throw it at a new power forward and you can convince Caleb Love to not declare for the draft or go overseas, right? So it's a balancing question. So a long-winded way of saying yes and no to your question of whether no, I'm
concerned. It's a strong answer, Brett. I really appreciate that. I'm sure our listeners do too. But I get what you're saying, because like there is the roster construction to think about. If you just remove the NIL, like a fifth-year senior guy, like that's not normal for Arizona men's basketball, especially for starters, right? So like someone like Crivas wants to play. Of course, you can't bank on Crivas even sticking around, too. I mean, he could enter the portal. He could go back home and play, you know, professionally. So it's hard to even try to open up space for any one player, because any one player could bounce at pretty much any time. So that's just another wrinkle in terms of building these rosters and trying to manage them in terms of, okay, free up a spot for so-and-so player, because so-and-so player could also be like, oh, yeah, I appreciate that. Deuces. You know, that's like Dylan Anderson, right? He redshirted last season, and the thought was he's going to maybe fit into the roster or into the plans next season. So they worked with him all season as a redshirt, and now he's leaving. And whether that he's going to be good or not, the fruits of the labor of the last season are going to pay off for some other school. So yeah, I get it, and I think Umar Ballo is a unique situation because he did turn himself into a player who could make a ton of money in this last season. I'm sure he got some NIL at Arizona, but he could probably make a lot more with certain other programs that have bigger checkbooks, bigger NILs. And I think, and I don't know, we don't know what the collectives have, right? That's just not, we don't know what players are making. I think On3 does their valuations. That's not real money. That's what they think some would make. There's no context for it, right? We don't know what Zach Edey would have been. I don't think that Edey was making anything, actually, because he's from Canada. But we don't know what the highest paid players were getting. Like, there's rumors, whatever. We don't know. So it's hard to say, okay, this is where Umar Ballo should slot in. Can Arizona afford Umar Ballo? But I do think that just Arizona's history with the players they get through traditional recruiting who can get NIL and through the portal like a Keyshawn Johnson, like a Caleb Love, like a Jaden Bradley, that they're probably not doing poorly with NIL. Like, are they going to be able to compete at the highest level? No. Like, the programs that are just getting players because of the bag, they're not going to compete with. But if it's a combination of good enough money with, you know, the playing style, the chance to win, the development to go to the NBA, then Arizona can compete for most players. So losing Umar Ballo doesn't mean to me that Arizona's NIL is a problem, or that Arizona's not going to be able to survive in this NIL transfer portal world. Like, it's a unique situation. Dylan Anderson, kind of, I mean, I don't know. I don't know what they're losing there other than time. You know, like, it wasn't like you could count on him next season because you just don't know what he could be. Now, maybe he goes to GCU or somewhere, plays one, you're like, oh, that would have been nice to have. Or maybe he's just not that good. You know, and he figures he might as well try to cash in somewhere so he can at least get minutes at a lower level program. I don't know where he goes. You know,
like time, like a sand through an hourglass.
Well, they lost the time they put into him last season. You know, that's what I mean.
That one's a bit almost weirder because you usually don't redshirt just to leave because you would have just left, right?
You'd think, yeah.
And there maybe there's more going on there in terms of guys Arizona's targeting. Maybe somebody got into Dylan Anderson's ear. We don't know. Like, he's a former Gatorade Arizona Player of the Year, big kid, had showed some flashes of potential.
Yeah, one of Lloyd's first big-time recruits from the high school ranks.
You know, it's one of those things where I don't think there's any animosity. I wish the guy well. I hope Arizona fills the roster with somebody that's even better than him, but I would say that to even guys that were NBA draft picks for Arizona. Yeah. I want to replace them with guys that are better.
Same thing with football. I'll never begrudge, like when we talked about when Arizona guys are hitting the portal, I'll never begrudge someone for leaving. It's their right to do so. I think it's kind of nice for them to have that freedom. Like, as a fan, it's unfortunate. Like, I mean, granted, Arizona basketball the last few years had players who stuck around multiple years. Like, that's maybe not common. Or won't be common in this era, but someone like Dylan Anderson, who, yeah, maybe by his junior year or senior year would have been an impact player. Maybe he wouldn't have been. We don't know. Whatever the coaching staff, I mean, they have an idea, and Dylan Anderson certainly has an idea of where he would fit in, and if he decides somewhere else is the best place for him, then I respect that. You know, that's up to Arizona to fill that spot. I'd like to think they'll be able to. Kylan Boswell is an interesting one, too, though, because this was a former high-level recruit. Two seasons ago, he was the backup to Creason. It's like, wow, this guy's going to be a stud, right? He was coming off the bench. He was good in the Princeton game. I think he was like one of the only players who was good in the Princeton game. And it's like, okay, Kirk Creason left because Kylan Boswell's given the keys to the car. Got off to a good start this season, and then things just were uneven the entire rest of the way, right? He was great against Long Beach State and then didn't do anything the rest of the tournament. And like Jaden Bradley, we talked last week, looks like he could be a potential star. That he was going to be point guard one for this team next season, and deservedly so. So if that's the case, if you're Kylan Boswell and you think you need to be a starting point guard somewhere, then it makes all the sense in the world to leave because it's not going to be in Tucson. At the same time, could he have benefited from maybe playing an off-guard, backup point guard role in this system? Sure. But given some of the reports that were out there, some of the rumors, some of the stuff that happened in Vegas that did not stay in Vegas, I think it's fair to say that maybe he just needed a fresh start somewhere else.
Yeah, I think that's the right way to frame it. And I don't even think there's animosity. I think Kylan Boswell said incredibly kind things about Tommy Lloyd and vice versa in terms of Tommy being a mentor to him in a lot of ways. And I don't know if you know, but Kylan Boswell is younger than the typical player for his class, Adam. And so, you know... It's funny because like I feel like it's, you know, history doesn't repeat itself, but it's rhyming where Kylan Boswell looked great at when everybody else looked terrible last March, and then everybody's like, yeah, that's my guy, that's the future star, and now it's the same thing with Jaden Bradley, and maybe it's correct. I think Kylan Boswell has gotten a bit too much, I don't know if blame is the right word or. Animosity from is the right word from
both,
Arizona
probably
fans. You know, he was just very inconsistent, and that's also for somebody that's young not necessarily that surprising. You know, would I wish he was more consistent and reached his potential at Arizona? Of course I do. Right. Do I hope that he goes and reaches his potential somewhere else? Yes, of course I do. I want to wish well on him. It's another one of those things where it's just a little awkward, and there's, you know, there's some bubbled up rumors that maybe Caleb Love has at least some chance of coming back. And if he's coming back and Jaden Bradley's the starter, if you're Kylan Boswell, all right, maybe you go. Right?
I think that right there kind of is the way to look at the portal guys leaving, is that we don't know what impact it'll have on the roster, if only because we don't know what the roster looks like. Because, yeah, if Caleb Love comes back, and there's been some inklings of some rumors that maybe he's thinking about it, which didn't seem like a possibility a month ago, but then you're like, okay, Jaden Bradley's a starting point guard. Caleb Love's your starting two guard. KJ Lewis is your starting three, right? You have a hole at four. Maybe it's Carter Bryan. Maybe it's a transfer portal guy. Then you have Crevis at the five. That's not bad. That backcourt is pretty dynamic. You know, your wings, you have athleticism, you have defense, and you have a little bit of shooting there. Guys like, I mean, Bradley showed a little bit more towards the end of the season. KJ Lewis is one. We know what Caleb Love can do when he's not playing Clemson. So it's like, all of a sudden it's like, oh, the roster doesn't look that bad missing these guys. And then you just do see like, oh, where would Colin Boswell fit in? You know, where would Dylan Anderson fit? Where would, you know, Philly B or Moroskis fit in on this team? But we don't know that right now. Like right now, it's like, okay, Arizona has how many players guaranteed to return for next season? I guess no one right now because the portal's still open. But, you know, you're still missing your entire starting lineup has not committed to coming back. No one has. You have a couple of guys on your bench. You know, you have KJ Lewis. You have Jaden Bradley from your bench who you know are going to come back. Crevis, too, it seems like. So three guys that played last season that you're expecting back. So it's not the... Like, until they start bringing guys in, either through the portal or just returning from last year's team, it looks a little clunky, right? It's like, oh, geez, who do they have? I think it was, you know, John Calipari, he did this press conference about going to Arkansas. He's like, yeah, I spoke to the team. There is no team. Like, everyone's gone. Like, I mean, that's kind of how it feels right now, but obviously it's not going to finish that way. And in the next couple of weeks, as the portal closes or Arizona brings guys in, like even the portal pickups last season, I mean, it's kind of quiet up until it's like, oh, wait, Keyshaw Johnson. Oh, crap. Caleb Love's coming. Jaden Bradley. Like, where do these come from? Like, Arizona's going to fill out the roster. Like we talked about last week, if you trust Tommy Lloyd and his coaching staff to bring in talent and develop talent, then I wouldn't worry about where they're at right now. But it's certainly an interesting place to be for them because there's a lot of unknown, a lot of question marks, a lot of who's going to play this spot.
And we've never been there before with the Tommy Lloyd offseason roster, right, Adam?
Fair.
No, and I say that mostly, you know, snarkily, but also even with what is coming back, I would contend this might be the most talented returning roster Tommy Lloyd has had, combined with his freshman class is by far his best high school class coming in, not counting anybody else coming in as a transfer. Like Jaden Bradley, sure, he was off the bench, but that's a former five-star guy that looked really great last year. KJ Lewis was probably the top-rated recruit for Arizona last year, but he was what, I'm like at 247, was number 85 nationally, right? Mo Crevis coming back, I think he's legit AF, and so does the coaching staff. You know, is he farther along as a sophomore than Umar Bala was when he transferred to Arizona after averaging, you know, a point and a half a game at Gonzaga?
Probably.
Right? And so, like, it's, I snarkily say that because it's, like, you know, everybody freaks out when they're figuring out a roster. Again, welcome to modern college basketball. Don't make me tap the sign. But I would actually contend that despite the losing the starters and even leaving room for if, you know, there's a chance Pella Larson or Caleb Love comes back, probably not, but maybe one of them, right? That might be a better core of a roster to supplement with transfers and then clearly his best high school recruiting class in terms of like McDonald's All-American type guys, you know, even the is it Sinan? How do you pronounce the one guy that changed that reclass? I don't know how to pronounce his last name.
And you're asking me, you think I know?
Well, I can pretty sure I can pronounce Carter Bryant.
Bryant.
How embarrassing for me.
Yeah.
But you've got, you know, everybody on in this freshman class coming in is basically at the ranking of KJ Lewis last year or higher, right? And everybody now is excited about KJ Lewis coming back, and he looked like a guy with a lot of potential. It's just it's a framing and a mindset, and we should at least at this point have learned to trust Tommy Lloyd's ability to fill out a roster, I guess is what I'm arguing.
And what I'll say to that, and I don't think you're wrong, but I'm thinking about Tommy Lloyd's three different teams, right? And granted, the first one he had, I think, was the most talented of returners, but they weren't his guys, but returning players. When you had, you know, Creasa, you had Dalen Terry, you had Ben Mathern, you had Coloco, you had Tubelis all coming back. I thought that was the most, because you knew more about that team. Like, we had seen them the year before. We didn't know them in Tommy Lloyd's system. We hadn't seen that. But we knew what these guys were capable of to the extent that, you know, we had seen them as freshmen or, in Coloco's case, you know, sophomore year. And so I felt really good about that team coming back. They're like, hey, this is a talented team. Like, how talented, we didn't know, and what they would do in that system, we had no idea. But then they lost a lot from that team, right? You know, you lost Dalen Terry, you lost Coloco, you lost Ben Mathurin. It was like, what's going to happen to this team? Well, they end up getting a 2 seed. Yeah, in a down year, sure, that team was inconsistent or a little bit iffy, but Tubelis stepped up. Umar Ballo stepped up, right? Like, things worked out for them. And then, of course, going into this season, they brought back a lot of players from last year's team other than Tubelis, basically, in terms of, like, big key guys. And Kreese, but obviously he was replaced by Boswell, so it felt different. This year is probably more like that second year, or it's going to be more like that, where it's like, okay, they're replacing a lot of key guys. Who can they get to fill those roles? The difference is, like, you're bringing all these freshmen who, yeah, they sound great. They're all five-star, great, highly rated guys. But how many freshmen make an impact these days? How many freshmen make an impact on the best college basketball teams? And I'm not saying they can't, right? I'm not saying Phillips can't, or Carter Bryant can't, or Sanone, we're going to go with for now, can't, or Emmanuel Stevens can't come in and make an impact. Like, it's possible. But I would not rely on any of them to be top five players for this team if I don't have to. And that's where, depending on who comes back, you know, if Caleb Love comes back, all of a sudden you have a number one score. You have your go-to option again to go. Now, like, your backcourt is set with veterans, right? Your 1 through 3, you have returners starting. Your 5 is a returner. And if you get a transfer power forward, now your starting lineup is veterans. That's great. So now you can use guys like Carter Bryant and Phillips and Sanone, if that, you know, assuming they all make it to campus. You can bring them off the bench, maybe bring them along a little bit slower to where by the end of the season, you're developing them differently because you expect them to be part of your program for the next year or two. Maybe you bring them along and, hey, by the time this, you know, January, February roll around, they're more consistent contributors. Or maybe one of them's like a Tubelis as a freshman, like, and Mathurin as a freshman, like, oh, these guys can actually play. Like, it's possible. But it's going to be different because this past season was veterans. And that's why I wrote about it. We talked about it. It was like, wow, this is something Arizona hasn't had experienced. Like, quality experience. They may not have as much of that next season, but it doesn't mean they can't be good or they won't be good. And that's where it goes back to, like we keep saying, if you trust Tommy Lloyd and he's given you no reason not to, then it's like, okay, the portal's going to be there. Arizona's going to lose a couple guys to the portal. They're going to bring people in. Like, that budget, the money they're not spending on an Umar Ball, or the money they're not spending on a Pella Larson or, you know, Kylan Boswell or some of these guys can go somewhere else. Let's see what that gets you, what their money plus system, plus chance to win, plus chance to get developed and go pro. Let's see what that can get. Probably something pretty good.
Yeah, and, you know, thinking back to the roster that Tommy inherited that you said, that is raw talent was definitely the best, but if you put yourself back in time there, nobody knew Dalen Terry was going to make the leap he did that year, and Ben Mather made a big leap that year too, right? And Azulis Tubelis still hadn't made his leap. All these things happened under Tommy's watch, right?
Yeah.
And if you look at, like, the freshman class, like, Tommy's first freshman class was the powerhouse of Shane Noel and Adama Ball, right?
And Noel wasn't his, I think. I think Noel was...
Well, he re-upped. He was committed, decommitted, but stayed. And then the next year, it's Kylan Boswell was the big name, and Henry Basar, Dylan Anderson, and Philly B, right? Mm-hmm. Then you move into 2023. You got KJ Lewis that looks like a hit, Moraskis, Krivas, and Conrad Martinez, which I think we have at least 1.5 hits, I would call it there, right? And all of those guys, in their at least in rankings, are eclipsed by the next year's class. And I'm not saying that you're going to rely fully on them, but I think they fill holes with upside. And I would argue that a Jaden Bradley coming back for his junior year is a more of a sure thing veteran than Dalen Terry was as a sophomore, right?
That's fair.
Or Azulis Tubelis, and especially at a point guard position, right? And even Mo Krivas, that the year of experience he's gotten, he is better than a sophomore Umar Ballo. I'm just going to say that. I think that's a safe bet I would put money down on, okay, right? If you have those guys, if Caleb Love stays, you get a great, you know, 4 out of the portal, and then you supplement it with those young guys, you might have something there, right?
And you know? If nothing else, you hope, and this is where we go back, you never, like, nothing is guaranteed year to year with roster movement, but you hope that those freshmen become next year's, you know, Dalen Terry and Ben Mathurin and Tubelis, and, you know, like, they become the sophomores who are leading your team when a guy, and, like, watch Caleb Love not come back, right? This is such a hypothetical. Right now, there's no indication either way, but that when he does move on, and if Jaden Bradley, after one full year as a starter, maybe after his junior year, is like, okay, I'm ready to go pro, especially if he has a good season, you know, as those guys move on, then the freshman class, this highly touted, star-studded freshman class, becomes your sophomores and your go-to players the next year. And it's a different team, but you have some sort of a history with those guys. Like, entirely possible.
Yeah.
Like, that's the goal, right? And that's how you build a program, that year after year, like, you get a few players who stick around for 3-4 years, a couple that stick around for 1 or 2, and then you have supplement them or fill in with those, you know, 1 year guys, and then every year you're competitive, and hopefully one of those years, it, you know, it all comes together perfectly all season long and in March, and you get something super special out of it.
Yeah, now I would say we want to see KJ Lewis make the Dalen Terry jump and replicate it that way. I don't think we want to have him replicate Dalen Terry of declare for the draft just to get his feet wet and a review, and then go, whoopsie, I'm a first round pick and leave a year earlier than everybody planned, which is a non-zero chance, I think, in the next couple weeks.
Yeah, I guess, I don't know, when people haven't announced they're returning, I mean, when guys aren't, does KJ Lewis have to announce he's returning, or is it kind of just assumed he's coming back? Like, I know he's supposed to be, the rumor, like, reports are he's going to be testing the waters, which I don't mind that, because it is, other than the fact that it is possible that he gets a first round grade someone. But, like, if someone say, like, someone not declaring they're coming back mean we should be concerned that they're not coming back? It's like, no, like, they're still enrolled, right? They're still, like, they're Arizona guys until they're not.
this is the dumb part of modern college basketball, Adam. Like, I don't leave work every day and be like, I declare I'm coming back, we're doing it again Monday, guys.
Yeah, yeah. But, like, for basketball, it's like, oh, this, he hasn't announced he's coming back yet. Oh no.
It's I love hate college sports sometimes, Adam. What can,
right?
I tell you?
What a time. Oh man. Well, Brett, let's take a break from some men's basketball portal news, and, you know, football camp is in full swing. Baseball's doing well. One of the best people to talk about both of those is Brian Peterson from AZ Desert Swarm. Let's hit him up after the break.
Hey, and before we go to the break,
oh, Adam, no, what's up?
I just want to announce I am coming back for the next segment.
Okay.
It's as much fanfare as was deserved for most college players' announcements.
All right. So, yeah, with that news in hand, let's take a break and talk to Brian Peterson.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PIE, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know,
trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcast, homecast.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
We're back. It's Wildcat Radio 2.0. We are joined by Brian Peterson of AZ Desert Swarm, the site manager, editor, kind of my boss in that way. He covers Arizona athletics, pretty much any program there, but especially right now football and baseball, which are coincidentally things that are happening and we're excited to talk about. So, Brian, welcome back to Wildcat Radio 2.0.
Thanks for having me back, guys.
Great. Yeah, of course. I don't know, Brian, should we start with football or baseball? What do you want to go with here?
Let's do football because that I just came from practice a little while ago, and I mean it's the more larger overarching thing because they're in the middle of spring practice, still have another 7 practices to go. They're gonna have a partial scrimmage this weekend, and then the spring game is 2 weeks from now. But then you have on Monday the NCAA transfer portal reopens in the middle of spring ball and is open for about 15 days. And there's a lot of speculation that this window is going to be ridiculous across the country because you may see kids who went to a new school in January suddenly realizing that the money, the NIL that they were hoping for, the promises didn't come, and now they're going to jump back in and try something else. You're going to see teams that realized from spring that they're drastically missing something be very aggressive to try to pick up stuff. You're already seeing people like the running back at Oregon State is apparently jumping in, and a couple other guys to that effect. And who knows what that's going to do to Arizona. I mean, there are some people that are very concerned, let's say, that the former head coach may try to encourage players that he previously brought to Arizona to follow him to Washington, ones that he tried to get to do that in January and was unsuccessful with. So it could be a little chaotic here in the next week or two.
So Brian, with that in mind, you're pretty plugged into the program. You're you see the players in spring practice every day. I'm just going to jump to the end of the conclusion of the portal discussion. Net, Arizona comes out of the spring portal in a better position or worse position overall in terms of roster composition?
Better when you take in all the additions that they'll eventually make. This is just the 15-day window when players can enter. That doesn't mean that's when they have to be picked up. You'll be adding guys throughout the spring. Brent Brennan said today that a very important thing is to thoroughly vet these guys and not just be, oh, that guy's in there, let's take him, and just go off some film and off that you really need to make sure you're getting the guy you want, which is harder to do in the portal because it's not like high school recruiting where you establish a relationship with these kids when they're sophomores, juniors, and build that bond and then get them to commit to you. This, you have to make the decisions quickly, but you have to do it very carefully. I think you could see one or two notable people who have been expected to be contributors jumping in there from Arizona, but I think in the long run, they'll still hold on to the vast majority because these kids, I don't see much that would have happened between now, between January and now to make them decide that Arizona isn't the right fit. It might just be a money thing, but I think that they will be aggressive in going after certain positions like more depth on the defensive line, getting at least one quarterback. Beyond that, maybe another linebacker, but just whatever is the best stuff that's out there. I think they will come out ahead.
You know, what's interesting about that is it's like, what would it change since January? And I guess the only thing that, other than the money, would be they got experience with this new coaching staff and decide they're not for me. You know, I don't like my fit. I don't like the way they're coaching. I don't like something about them. And given that this is Brent Brennan's first spring practice with Arizona, like, what are the impressions you're getting in terms of how the players have responded to the coaches? Because obviously we've seen the press conferences, and you're never going to get a player to come in the press conference and say, you know what, I hate these coaches, they're terrible, I can't wait for the portal to open because I am out of here. But just in terms of like the vibe from what you're able to see, how have players respond to this new staff?
I think they're liking it for the most part. A lot of the younger players on the roster, particularly the ones from California, already knew a lot of these coaches because whether San Jose State was a serious consideration for them, they had met these coaches along the recruiting trail during that time, like Speedy Luke, at least one of the other young running backs had been recruited and had been offered by San Jose. Same with some of the offensive linemen and some of the defensive players. So that helps. So it's not like the who is this guy kind of thing. And I think they've seen enough from Brennan to realize that he's very different than Jed in terms of the persona and, you know, without beating around the bush. I don't think they're as worried that what he's saying is going to be different than what he actually does. That maybe some of the ones who have stuck around have realized that, you know, Jed was a salesman. And I think Brennan has more of a vibe of a guy who really, you know, is interested in all facets of this and not just what's it going to do for me right now. So I think that overall it's been a positive impression, but you really never know what's inside these kids' minds.
A salesman. I thought we were friends, says Humberto Lopez. No, but you know, focusing on what you're seeing on the field and the guys that are on the roster today, what have you seen that has jumped out, especially among the newcomers? Who are the guys that have maybe surprised you in a positive direction? Who are the guys that are looking like they're making a jump that might contribute next season?
As far as the newer players?
Yeah.
The biggest one would be Trey Smith, the defensive end, the edge rusher that came over from San Jose. He's probably going to start on one side of the defensive line. I mean, this is his position coach from over there. And he's a veteran. I think he's a fifth year guy and was very good at San Jose. And it's the same kind of attacking scheme that they have up front. So I would be very surprised if he doesn't start or is a big part of that rotation up there. Kwali Conley, the running back that came from San Jose, will be right there up in the mix. I think they'll go four running backs like Arizona did last year. So the starter doesn't necessarily mean they're going to get the most carries, but I think he'll be heavily involved in there. Beyond that, like the newcomers, some of the more impactful ones like Ja'Cory Krosky Merritt, the running back from New Mexico, won't be here till the summer. Same with Kavon Darton, the defensive tackle from Syracuse, who I'm really excited to meet because we have the same listed height and weight. So, you know, it gives me thought that
is that good for you or bad for you, or how does this work?
I don't know. I mean, I'm looking, we're both going to stand there at 5'10", 280 and go, which is the better body type? You know, we got to have some comparison there, but he could be involved there. And there's still like Brennan and his staff could have just grabbed anybody they could find back in January just to fill, but they didn't. He had told us even before the February signing period that when he was at San Jose, they always kept a couple scholarships open for during the spring because you may realize you need something. Arizona's got 14 available scholarships, which is a lot more than you'd want, but considering the timeline they had, it's not surprising. A couple of them could go to some walk-ons, but I think they'll probably add at least 6 to 8 guys during the offseason. So that's where I think you're going to see the guys who have a much better chance of making an immediate impact.
So Brian, first off, your body type is beautiful. I just need to get that out there. but one of the guys that you haven't mentioned that I've seen bubble up in some reports that it seems like a guy that might be a thing that I don't know if anybody necessarily had on their radar is Cyrus Durham. What has he looked like on the field as a pass rusher?
Yeah, I haven't had a chance to see him as much. I think he's been like off on different drills when I've been looking closely at defensive line type stuff. But yeah, he's a junior college guy who just same school as Keanu Maloto, who we spoke with on Tuesday, another defensive end. I mean, they're going to play a lot of guys, as many as they can up there. Kind of like what Johnny Nansen did. And they have so many open spots because I think 8 of the guys who played last year have moved on either to another school or they're done with college. And so there's a lot of room there. And I mean, Durham, the fact that they went after him in February when they didn't really need to go after as many guys, I think that tells me that they want him to be involved right away.
So along those lines then, because we're talking about, you know, we're a little bit more football here, but we're going to get to baseball in a second. But I'm curious, like, this is Brent Brennan and his staff. It's their first year with Arizona, but it's not their first year together, most of them, and coaching and all of that. But compared to 3 years ago when Jed Fish took over, like, I'm sure they run practices different, but, you know, Fish took over a program that had been this huge losing streak coming off 7-87 loss. You know, the program was a mess, so he was running things a certain way, trying to build something. Have you noticed that Brennan, is it because maybe they're more experienced coaches and have done this before, or the fact that they're taking over a team that has so many guys in place, has a structure, has some quality, some talent already on the roster, that practice has a different tone to it, a different pace, a different vibe? Like, not just because it's different coaching stuff, because the makeup of the roster is entirely different. Has that been evident?
Yeah, and it's for both things. I mean, you can't compare this to Jed's first spring, because that was, it was almost like everybody was learning this all over again. They had a bare bones roster. They grabbed whoever they could from the portal. It was just a island of mismatched toys and a coaching staff that had a lot of experience, but not together. And so everyone was learning from each other. And this, I mean, most of this coaching staff is from San Jose, but most of the team was here. And the coaches have been quick to point out over and over again that they're going to fit into the team and the players, their scheme, how they can, rather than make the players and the team fit into the scheme that they brought with them to San Jose. So, you know, this kind of is the exact opposite of what happened two coaches ago when Kevin Sumlin and Noel Mazzone came in and said, hey, we've got this great mobile quarterback in Khalil Tate, who's probably a Heisman candidate. Let's make him a drop back passer. That's the complete opposite that's going on here. And I think that that's something that, that Arizona fans should be very happy to hear, that they're not going to try to mess with the good parts that are back from that team from last year.
And so that's an interesting framing, especially as I look at what we thought was a weakness last year on the defensive side of the ball that turned into a strength at the end of the season, largely on the under the tutelage of now defensive coordinator Dwayne Aquina. I'm curious to know, you know, for all of the additions of players and talent and the guys that are to come, It seems to me on the defensive side, the biggest acquisition of talent is in the coaching room, where you got Danny Gonzalez, you've got Dwayne Aquina in the defensive coordinator role. You've got some interesting other coaches there. You know, Jed Fish took the entire offensive staff with him. What's your read on the defensive staff and how they're approaching, you know, fitting the scheme to the talent of the guys that they have in there and how they're developing them?
Well, I mean, Dwayne Aquina is essentially using the bulk of what Johnny Nansen used for the scheme, and he had a big hand in how that worked, especially how the back end of it worked and played up to the front seven. And so he's doing that and letting the coaches that came in for particularly Siamalu on the defensive line have his approach to the defensive line, which seems to be more aggressive than what Nansen and Jason Kambusi did. But otherwise, it's pretty much the same kind of scheme. There's going to be a lot of 5, 6, even 7 defensive back kind of alignments, which you saw from Aquina and Nansen. And Danny Gonzalez is on board with that because they've got that star position, which is essentially a hybrid linebacker, nickelback kind of thing. In the Don Brown defense, that was the Viper. And so that's somebody that, that kind of plays both linebacker and in the secondary. So all these coaches are working together on doing that. But they see the amount of returning talent on in the secondary and just letting them maximize what they can do. I think Danny Gonzalez is such a great pickup for this, because he's a guy who's had experience as a coordinator and as a head coach. And those things are just going to play really well with a Dwayne Aquina, who hasn't been a coordinator in forever, but has the respect of all these players. So it's almost like they've got two coordinators back there.
Now we're talking to Brian Peterson of AZ Desert Storm, the editor-in-chief, covers pretty much everything. Switching to baseball here is, you know, the Cats have won 8 in a row as we record this show on Thursday the 11th. Is Chip Hale walking around campus just giving a middle finger to everyone, being like, yeah, Like, I mean, is that what's happening? Because, I mean, and like, we know, like, Brett and I talked last week, and Brian, we've had multiple conversations. Like, I'm not necessarily sold on Chip Hale, but at the same time, he's done nothing to warrant a lack of faith. And especially recently this season, it's like he's showing a lot of people with the way the pitching staff has gotten better with the changes he's made there and the coaching staff. And just like all of a sudden, they look like a good program, a good team again. Like, is this Arizona baseball? Is this who they're going to be?
Yeah, I mean, this is the closest team to what you can really grade Chip and his staff on as far as their performance, because it's almost all their guys. There's maybe two or three pitchers who they inherited and a couple guys that had been signed to Arizona under Jay Johnson who stuck around after he left. So this is where you can really start grading them. And it had a really rough start to the season. Some of that had to do with the fact that they were playing a lot of strong teams, but also they were breaking in a mostly new offense and figuring themselves out. And they were losing a lot of close games and showing a team that had a lot of freshmen and sophomores in the batting order. And now over time, that's gotten better and better. But also what's buoyed them the entire year has been the pitching. The biggest change that happened in the offseason was at pitching coach, bringing Kevin Vance over from Boston College, and him along with a guy named John DeRuin, who's the player development director, have completely overhauled the pitching staff. And it didn't involve bringing in a lot of guys. There is Clark Candiotti, who has been excellent as the number two starter on the weekend, and Kyler Haney from the bullpen, who came from Kansas State. But otherwise, it's guys who were here last year who are just maybe changing a little bit about their arm slot or the way they throw a certain pitch and all that. And it's really played up. And now, I mean, the fact that Arizona has the second best ERA in the conference and one of the top 25 in the country, you would have never thought that the way things were with the previous team. And that shows that, Chip recognized, okay, my pitching sucks. I need to do something about it. I can't just get rid of all these guys and bring in a whole bunch of new ones. I got to try to fix what's here. And he found a pitching coach who unfortunately may only be here for a year, because with the success he's had, the joke amongst myself and other people who cover the team is half the SEC is going to come after him for this, to try to be their pitching coach, which is just a sign of the times, but it also shows how good he's been. And, this team looks like, if it can stay on this kind of pace, and I don't mean winning every game, but just being competitive and winning some of these close games, will make it into the NCAA tournament, which would mean four consecutive years, which hasn't happened since the 1950s. And the first coach to do it 3 years in a row to start their time at the program.
That totally aligns with the people that are ready to fire him at the first game they lose after the 8-game winning streak.
If they go 2 out of 3 this weekend against Louisiana Tech, there's going to be sky is falling kind of commentary.
Well, and that was actually where I was wanting to go. So, you know, they've won 8 straight, and I believe most of the games were on the road as well, which is kind of crazy. They got Louisiana Tech, and if I'm recalling correctly, then they have Grand Canyon, which is a pretty solid program.
And then they have Washington State at home. So 6 of the next 7 are at home. And then they play the last place team in the conference on the road, Washington. So there's a potential here to really put together a nice long run before the end of the season, when they have Stanford, a surprisingly good Utah team, and a top 10 Oregon State team to finish the regular season.
So what you're saying is they go win 17 straight, lose 1 to the last place Washington, and they fire Chip Hale, right?
Someone will fall for it. I mean, even during this streak, there's the comments of, well, they're doing this against mediocre teams, and it's like, well, would you rather than lose to the mediocre teams? I mean, it's better than losing, and good teams are supposed to beat the teams that they're better than. Or that the program is still not is in worse shape than where Jay Johnson left it, which I would completely disagree with. Not to mention the fact that there's so much recency bias that comes when it comes to evaluating coaches. that because Jay Johnson went to a World Series and to the World Series Championship Series his first year, people will quickly forget that he missed it in his third and his fourth, and there were the same calls to get rid of him. And then the 2020 team had a lot of promise, and that year got wiped out, and then they make the World Series again in 21, and it's like we completely forgot that they missed it back-to-back years. Or you completely forget that Andy Lopez won the national title in 2012 and then missed two of his last 3 years. So, you know, Chip hasn't missed a tournament yet. So to really say he's been a failure is just unfair.
I can get on board with that. And that's kind of where I landed too with Brett last week talking. It's like, I'm just because I may not necessarily believe that Chip Hale can be the guy long-term doesn't mean I think he's been terrible up to this point, right? It's he may have more to prove with someone like me because I'm just not big on hiring alums. But at the same time, you know, making the tournament, making the postseason, and winning games is how you prove it. So eventually I'll get on board. If this keeps up, then yeah, it's going to be hard to argue. And not that Chip's doing it for that reason. He obviously cares about Arizona and wants to win for these guys. But, you know, when you look at this team, like, is the pitching, like, obviously when they're winning eight in a row, everything's working out right. And it's not going to, they're not going to go undefeated the rest of the season. Probably that's a declarative statement. You never know, but what can we expect, do you think, the rest of the way for this team? Like, do you see them as a postseason team? Do you see them as a team that's going to keep pitching like this, that the offense is going to continue to get better? Or, like, where do they kind of land in the Pac-12 and in the grand scheme of college baseball, do you think?
I mean, their offense still needs to improve overall because at some point they're going to have – the pitching is going to run into some rough games. And that just hasn't happened. Like particularly because of the starting pitching. The three weekend starters have made 22 combined starts, and 20 of them have gone at least five innings, and none of them have involved giving up more than four earned runs. The bullpen had some struggles early on as they were figuring out where people were going, and there's been the odd rough performance from one, maybe two relievers in a game, but overall that group has just been lights out as far as finding who works in what in the best situation. But at some point they're going to get the Jackson Kemp, the Friday night starter, is going to get shelled because it's just happened. It's how baseball is. And since they haven't shown the ability to score 10 runs every game like they did the previous two seasons, can they win that kind of game? And what happens if one or more of those starters starts to get figured out with the scouting reports of opposing teams? So that's where there's still that uncertainty. But if you have good pitching, you always have a chance to win a game. And that's pretty much what they've had. They've won 9 of 10, and the only game in there where the pitching overall was bad was that Tuesday night game against New Mexico State, where they were mostly using guys that they don't use on the weekend. They're not going to do that anymore. I think down the stretch, other than maybe the starter that they use on Tuesday, those guys in the midweek games are all going to be the same relievers that they use on the weekend, and they're going to look at those as games of the utmost importance.
Makes sense. They're 18-13 right now, 10-5 in the conference. Of course, winners of 8 straight, and looking like a team that's going to be playing in the postseason, which, to your point, like you said, to do it 4 straight seasons, 3 straight years for Chip Hale to start his tenure, that'd be pretty impressive. You know, Arizona hasn't done it since the 1950s, and it's cool to go back to the 1950s, going back like to the 1850s and 60s for the state of Arizona, not as good. So, you know,
we're going there, huh?
Well, you know, so that's we can all get on board with going back to the 1950s for Arizona baseball, though. So, yeah, it's a long season, but obviously it's getting a little bit shorter, getting closer to the end. And if they keep playing like this, then I think it's going to say a lot of really good things about Chip Hale and his ability to guide this program. And, you know, we're all rooting for that.
Yeah, I mean, they're in projected fields right now from Baseball America and D1 Baseball, partly because you kind of have to have, like, at least 3 teams from the Pac-12. But if they finish in the top 3 in the regular season, I don't see them not making it unless they just are abysmal in those non-conference games, which they have, I think, 7 or 8 left, and have like a 27-26 record. But it would be hard to have that and finish in the top 3. And also, if you finish in the top 3 in the regular season, you are considered the top seed of your pool in the Pac-12 tournament, which gives you the advantage of you really only have to win one of your 2 games probably to advance in that, and those extra games are just going to help build up the resume. And they've performed well in those tournaments the last 2 years. They made the semifinals the first year, and they made the finals last year. So things are definitely in the positive direction for it, but I wouldn't say it's a guarantee that they're in the tournament.
All right, way to hedge, but totally understandable. It's a long season.
Absolutely.
It's baseball. Well, that's Brian Peterson. He's a site manager for AZDesertSwarm.com, the editor-in-chief. Does a great job there. You can find him on the Twitter machine at RealBJP. Brian, I know there's, I'd say ask you if there's anything to plug, but I know there's a ton of stuff always, and you're going to get a column from me soon, too, as yet to be titled or written, but it's coming, so we could plug that, you know. But
oh, I like the idea we were discussing earlier today. I think it would really play up well.
So we'll see if I'm a talented enough writer to get there. Well, that's a nice tease for our listeners.
Sure you can. you showed off your chops in the Twitter comments, so I'm sure that we can get you there.
I'll see what I can do. But Brian, we appreciate the time, of course, and we'll catch up with you again down the road. So that's Brian Pierce. Let's take a break, and we come back to do some news and notes with Arizona Athletics. Welcome back. It's Wildcat Radio 2.0. Thanks again to Brian Peterson for sharing that insight in Arizona football and Arizona baseball. Both of them feeling pretty good about right now. Of course, the transfer portal could cometh for Arizona football, but we'll see, right? If the vibe is pretty much that the players who stuck around like this coaching staff, believe in this coaching staff, then there's less reason to leave. And if they're feeling good, you know, as long as the key players stick around, then you have to think they'll be able to pull from the portal. Like, it doesn't always just take players. Like, this coaching staff isn't brand new. They've now kind of established in Tucson. They're not just scrambling to figure out their roster. The spring portal will allow them to kind of go shopping themselves. You know, there's, what they say, 14 scholarships open. Like, they can go get talent, too, even if they lose some.
Well, you know, we talked about it with basketball. We talked about it with football. And we've talked about it before in this pod. And, like, I do not bemoan guys chasing a bag.
Nope.
You know, but, you know, also, like I've said, the funny thing is about people that are doing things solely motivated by money tend to be motivated solely by money. And that shows up in weird ways in, mm-hmm. especially, I think, sports and even more so college sports. But, you know, I think Arizona will come out, as Brian said, at the end of it, come out ahead. But we'll see.
Yeah. Like, it's until the portal closes, you don't feel great. But at the same time, like, if Arizona starts adding some key players, you're like, oh, this guy's good. You know, this guy's going to help. Then you'll feel a lot better about the portal. Some news and notes for our listeners here, Brett, because there's always stuff going on. Of course, softball keeps winning. That's nice. You know, Caitlin Lowe's team looks like they've kind of found their footing. They won their last few games. So definitely take that. They get a nice series with Oregon at home coming up, and then ASU also at home. So that's a big six games for you. Number 22, Oregon. Of course, it's always nice to beat ASU, your in-state rival. Baseball on that eight-game winning streak. But, yeah, women's basketball, some returners. Isis Bet is coming back for another season. That was announced. And I remember talking about women's basketball. I'm just going to be curious how this offseason went. For a lot of the players who played last season, stuck around, would they return? How would Arizona do in recruiting? You know, is there a certain type of player that they're going to be more attracted to in terms of style, personalities? And there doesn't seem to be the mass exodus from players who stuck it out. So it seems like it gives them something to build on, you know, making that mm-hmm. run to the postseason, getting that win in the play-in game, and then building off of that. That's what you wanted to see.
Yeah, I think that's right. And it's still going to be a curious offseason.
Oh, yeah.
But I feel better about that program than I did mid-season when it seemed like, oh boy, what's going on?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So it feels like they've got their legs underneath them, and hopefully will, you know, show up in a new conference next year that won't be as ridiculous as the Pac-12 was for women's basketball.
Well, and we could talk about that too. Stanford's coach retired. So that would have been helpful to have happened a few years ago.
Yeah, well, you know, so would have Cameron Brink not being on Stanford the last couple of years. You know, you play the opponent in front of you, Adam.
Yeah, Tara Vanderveer, great coach, a legend of the game, of course. You appreciate what she did for the sport. I don't appreciate that they were the premier program in the conference and beat Arizona in the national championship game, but at the same time, did a lot for women's basketball, and Arizona certainly benefits from that. What else, Brett? Arizona football got a commitment for 2025. Kellen Ford, a tight end, three-star, top 750 player, according to 247. Like, you'll take that. You know, it's early, but I like Arizona keeping the focus on tight ends. Like, that's a position that I think could benefit them in terms of, like, not every program uses them. And I think what Arizona did with Tanner McLaughlin, with Jed Fish and that stuff was good, because it allows you to be like, hey, we can pitch to tight ends. Like, here, come to Arizona. You know, we could be tight end you at Arizona. Gronkowski went there. So, like, so well, if you could continue that, if you're Arizona's a coach, just say, hey, we have a spot for you as a tight end. We're going to get you the ball. Then, yeah, and maybe Kellen Ford is one of the next guys to do that.
Well, and there's, you know, even with Tanner McLaughlin moving on, there's still a lot of talent on this roster, and Tyler Powell, Roberta Miranda,
Kian Burnett,
and Kellen Ford, you know, is, you know, he's a three-star. He's like a high three-star, like you said, like top 750. You're in that top 800. That's what we talked about during the best Jed Fish years. We're like, that's kind of like a differentiation line generally in recruiting classes. Plus, when you're talking about a tight end that has at least the measurables, if you can believe the listings of 6'5", 230, you know, as a high school player, you assume you could probably add 20 pounds of muscle on that. That's a frame that, you know, is projectable, to say the least. And it sounds like he's a pretty balanced player, and it's a pretty good start for Brent Brennan and staff in terms of making their first class.
Yeah, definitely. I'll take that. Not that it matters right now, but early polls for Arizona men's basketball next season, they're in the top 25 of pretty much everyone's, which is kind of funny because it's like, we don't know who's going to be on the roster. But what I do think this shows, and I think it's important, is that confidence and time. Like, nationally, like if you listen to ASU fans after Arizona loses in the tournament, they'll tell you Arizona is a joke of a program, always underachieves, not really one of the premier programs, yada, yada, because, you know, they didn't win a national championship. They ignore the fact that most teams don't win a national championship every year. But seeing that Arizona is projected to be top 10, top 15, top 25, even with all that they're expected to lose, I just think shows that where the national perception, people actually follow college basketball and understand college basketball. Again, not ASU fans. But for those people who get the game, they see Arizona, they see a coach, they see a program that's going to reload more than it's going to rebuild, which allows them to say, you know what, they're going to still be one of the better programs next season. Like, that's where you want Arizona to be, where they can lose their entire starting lineup, basically. And everyone who watches them is like, yeah, they're still bringing back tons of talent. Like, they'll be fine.
Yeah. So first, I agree with the sentiment and your point you just made fully. Second, the only thing I care less about than a preseason poll is a way too early offseason poll in college basketball. So I'm just going to give you, yes, I agree.
Sure.
And then also,
just what it means, like, the poll itself doesn't matter. But it's the perception of what the poll means for April 11th as a recording and need to fill some time, I think we can make the case that, you know.
Yeah.
And also, they do have some talent coming back and coming into the roster freshman-wise.
And also, fair or not, in the world of college sports and recruiting, to some degree, perception can become reality, right? Mm-hmm. So I think if you have a positive perception, it can only help.
Yeah, yeah. Other news, Brett, this is Wildcat Radio 2.0 related. We're joining a new community.
We are?
We are. There's this new community called the College Huddle, which is going to be this premier site, premier collection of podcasts and video shows all over the country. We're, of course, joining the Big 12 portion of it because Arizona is joining the Big 12. But it's going to be one of the best places you can find all sorts of podcast information on all the different schools. If you want to know more about Arizona's future opponents, you know, you can listen to their shows and we could help plug those. And also we'll be getting guests from all these shows too, to give you insight into Arizona's opponents, which is one of the things I'm most excited about because, you know, like when we, especially during football season, we try to preview the opponent. It's a lot better to get that information from someone who covers that opponent, who follows that opponent, rather than us just reading box scores and trying to be like, you know, there's a reason, like, I think people like some of our shows during football season, because we don't try to pretend we know every other program. Instead, we just bring in people who do know those programs, and you can expect us to have a lot of guests on that way and just a lot of great coverage, a lot of fun coverage. I know, Brett, you did a show with the USF guys, right?
UCF.
There's too many Fs. UCF guys earlier in the week, and they seemed like great guys. You did a great job, and we could plug that, too, on Wildcat Radio AZ, the Twitter handle, if we haven't already. But just that's, I think, what you can expect from the College Huddle, just a lot of community, a lot of collaboration, a lot of good content about just college sports all across the country. And we're happy to be a part of it.
Yeah, I'm going to let you guys in a secret. I was joking before when I gave off the impression that I did not know we were joining this. I actually had joined that other pod, the Knighted Ones podcast. And I actually even wrote a thing on the College Huddle website that I maybe tweeted out. That was, you know, a solid hour's worth of two beers worth of single one draft writing that you corrected like six pieces of grammar. And I said, good enough for me. Hit send, publish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, but I think it's going to be exciting. You know, we're moving into the new era of college football, and we're getting to interact with some new faces, some new podcasts, some new people. And I think it's only going to be a positive thing for us. You know, also there's going to be the Big 12 is going to have their own kind of conference show. There's going to be a national show. You know, I think, do you have their Twitter handles in front of us? We should probably plug them, Adam, as responsible partners in this. I believe it's at the College Huddle for the main one. And I forget, is it at the Big 12 Huddle?
I don't have that in front of me. That would involve show prep, and that's just not my thing. You know that.
That's just not on brand for us.
But one of the things that excites me the most about this, Brett, is that especially as Arizona moves into a new conference with all these new opponents, it'll give us a better chance to learn about them and for our listeners to learn more about them too, just by listening to some of these podcasts and listening to some of the guests that we're going to have from these podcasts. Because, I mean, same reason you were on the UCF show, like they're like, who's Arizona, right? Like, who's this new program, football-wise, basketball-wise? Only what you hear in the headlines, they don't know about Arizona, and you gave them great insight into what the fan base is like, where the programs are at, just kind of the vibe around the University of Arizona athletics. And we're going to be able to get that from a lot of these new, you know, conference rivals, conference foes, and I think that's pretty cool. So looking forward to being part of the College Huddle and all that has to offer. It's just going to keep growing. You know, we're at the beginning. We're just soft, like almost soft launching it right now. But it's just going to build, and build. And I think it's going to be something that's going to be beneficial for all our listeners, and looking forward to bringing that content to them.
Yep. And I did find it, Adam. The Twitter handle for the national one is at College Huddle. And they have a YouTube channel at the College Huddle podcast and thecollegehuddle.com, which I believe is where my, if you want to call it an article column, amateur cosplay writer cosplay,
the last one, yeah, the last one,
yeah, that's probably what it is. And the Knighted One podcast also has a YouTube channel, so if you wanted to see me in my home office, I have some beautiful photos that my friend took from the Tucson area, and you can see what I look like when I'm tired on a Monday night. And don't you all want to see that?
I mean, I get to see what you look like tired on a Thursday night, so this is great. You know, if it's anything like it was on a Thursday, then, yeah, viewers are in for a treat.
Oh, I don't know if a treat is what they're going to get, Adam.
Well, speaking of Twitter handles, of course, ours is Wildcat Radio AZ, which is also a promo code for Home Field. If you're making your first order on Home Field, getting some of that pretty sweet gear, use promo code Wildcat Radio AZ, you get 15% off your order. And if you're looking for the Home Field website, just go to Wildcat Radio AZ Twitter account, and we got a link in the bio for you. But yeah, get 15% off your first order from Home Field. Super soft, super cool. I wore one of the new shirts last week at Final Four Fan Fest. I got zero compliments on it, but I think I was the only one wearing a U of A shirt. No, I wasn't the only U of A person wearing U of A walking around there, but I think there was one North Carolina fan who saw me wearing red and thought I was a North Carolina State fan, and I'm like, ooh, no. Like, I actually like a good program. Not one that got lucky and made it to the Final Four, but, you know, I didn't say that because it would have been unbecoming, and, like,
also
they deserve to be there. Like, they did. Four games. They deserve to be there.
For all of the anger and emotions I feel at the nonsensical narrative against Arizona for not making a Final Four, you got to give them their prop, and they have.
Absolutely.
And
they deserve their flowers.
Arizona, if you don't want to hear it, I mean, the fans have no control over this mostly, other than donating NIL, maybe. You know, until Arizona gets there, they're just going to have to tolerate it.
Well, yeah, NC State fans weren't exactly, like, mean to Arizona fans, right? Like, they were just happy to be there, and really the Final Four went the way it was supposed to go. So, no real complaints there.
Especially according to your brackets that paid you out, Adam.
Yes, I like making money. That's fun. I'm not mad about
if you like,
that.
You know what? If you like making money, why did you become a journalist, Adam?
Oh, that hurts. Your truth's cut deep. They cut real deep, Brett. Anyway, yeah, you can find us on Twitter at Wildcat Radio AZ. We'll occasionally post a mailbag there. But even if we don't do that, if you have a question, shoot us a line. Let's see if we can get to it on the next show. If you're listening to us, you probably found us on iTunes or on Spotify. If you're on iTunes, leave us a rating and a review. We will read that review on the air. Of course, you can subscribe to us on both platforms. That'd be really cool. Brett, do we have any new ratings or reviews this week?
We do not.
That's okay. Like, we don't demand it. We just say, if you want to do it, by all means, we will read on the show. But yeah, I think, oh man, football keeps going. Baseball, softball keep going. Lots going down. Who knows? Arizona's looking for a new school president. So there's always going to be news. And the portal, of course, for football opens up on Monday. So I imagine we'll have some portal news to talk about next week for football and maybe some for basketball as well. But whatever happens with Arizona Athletics, we will talk about it on next week's show. And until then, thank you for listening. Remember to bear down.
Bear down.